Absolutely. We are always so happy to see this gentleman, and he always has great advice for personal branding, how to get along in the workplace, how to deal with a changing workplace, any issues really you could have around work, I guess.
Yeah, I would say, or your general environment. He is a personal branding expert and communications consultant. Please welcome from Evan Thompson and Associates, Mr. Evan Thompson.
Hello, how are you?
Thank you. Just great to be back.
Yes.
As we're dragged kicking and screaming into winter. It's not very wintry out there. It's not even fall-like.
Not today.
No, today is quite a nice day. Although I will say, I walked my dog around 6:30 this morning, and it was even hotter at 6:30 than it is now.
Yeah, because it was hot yesterday, and then that led into today.
Yeah.
And then now it was originally supposed to be 26 to 32 degrees the next 2 days. And now it is actually dropping a little bit. I have family coming up from Georgia this weekend, and I had to tell them, like, don't think it's normally like this in October here.
Yeah.
You guys are lucky you're getting Atlanta weather right about now.
It's pretty warm in Georgia. Where from in Georgia?
Atlanta. Yeah. So, I mean, this is right now what we're looking at over the next few days, where it's like a high of like 17 or whatever. That's like a typical early October in Georgia, where I'm from. So I had to tell them, like, don't think that it's always like this here. So we are experiencing a late warm snap here in Toronto, but that's because of all the hurricanes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Climate change. Yay.
But the thing, and I know a lot of people that'll go, oh, good, I wanted it to stay warmer longer. I go, my problem with that is that we don't really get a fall, right? It's not like winter gets delayed. It just ends up being we get a short fall, and then all of a sudden there's snow tomorrow.
And you go look at all the retailers, and some of them are cutting back on their lines. You can't really buy a raincoat, classic raincoat anywhere because the seasons are so condensed. Raincoats are squeezed out, pardon the pun, wrung out, done.
It's funny that you say that. I was shopping the other day and I went to a store and the thing that was on clearance was the raincoats. And I was like, oh yeah, because there's going to be almost no fall. It's gonna be heavy coat weather before we know it, right? Well, you're absolutely right.
Gets folks cranky, you know, when they want their cool weather and they wake up in a sauna and then the HVAC in the office buildings gets the
Shut
people
off.
In the buildings all cranky. 1 minute they're freezing.
Well, and I didn't know this. Someone in my neighborhood is a teacher, and her school doesn't have air conditioning. So when, you know, for a couple weeks there, it was like 30 degrees, and her students were all dot room. And yeah, they have no air conditioning at her school.
Yeah, there's none in my my daughter's school.
What?
Because it's an old school, yeah.
Terrible.
Old school. Hey, well, let me ask you this. So you're an expert, Evan, on especially the workplace and the work environment. You know, we've talked on this show a lot about people getting mood swings or suffering from depression or anxiety because of the changing seasons or whatever. Does the weather and the changing seasons and climate and all that, does that affect workplace attitude as well? Does it change from season to season in work environments?
I think most definitely. I think you look out the window in the morning and one day you're contemplating darkness and then the season changes and all of a sudden the birds are singing at 6 a.m. in the morning and you're up early. So your sleep patterns definitely change with the seasons.
Yeah.
People tend to be less motivated to get up in darkness.
Yeah.
Not as excited about playing a round of golf at 5:30 in the morning when it's pitch black. But when it's sunny, yes. And that transcends itself into the workplace where people arrive tired or refreshed or cranky. And they're looking out their window at the end of the day. And it's only 4 in the afternoon, but it's dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And seasonally affected depression kicks into play.
Since about April or May, I've started now. It's regular for me to be here earlier than I used to be, and also often later than I used to be. And so sometimes I don't leave here till 6 or 6:30, and all summer that's been fine because it's still light out for another 2 hours after that. And it's, you feel, but I know that in a few weeks, when it starts getting dark earlier and earlier, it's going to feel like I'm leaving here in the middle of the night, and I'm going to not want to do it anymore. But
it's like the saga of the mole people. Get up in the dark, eat in the dark, work in the dark.
Yeah.
But there's no rec after. There's no vitamin D. There's nothing. Right. Just go home, cook dinner, and go to bed because you're so wasted because it's dark. It's like living in the Arctic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. This morning,
I am a mole person.
This morning, you are.
Yeah, I know.
This morning when my alarm went off, it was that first, that's when I knew the season was changing, because my alarm went off and it was dark out.
Yeah.
This was the first time that's happened, you know, since way back earlier in the year. And it was harder to get up. It was harder to get up just because, I mean, I got plenty of sleep, but just the fact that it was still relatively dark outside made me like, oh God, what am I? And I said that to myself. I was like, yeah, the time has come now where I'm going to be getting up, getting breakfast ready for my kid and everything like that. It's going to still be dark out.
Gross.
So where does one go to seek solace in the darkness?
The bottle, Evan.
The bottle or... the internet.
Oh, sure.
It's a lot more friending in the darkest days of winter than in the sunny, happy days of summer.
And I bet there's also a lot more time wasted just going back and forth between your social media, right? Because we get stuck in these loops where you're just sitting on the couch and you're not even really watching TV. You're kind of tired. It's too early to go to bed. You're like, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Back to Facebook.
Maybe I can get myself some inspiration if I go on and I make a new friend or I comment on a piece of music that I've picked up on YouTube. It is a very, very complicated process on many levels.
I've noticed that I've changed a lot. What I thought of something really funny at the gym today, and I was like, I'm going to post that. And then I was like, oh, I actually probably won't, because I don't want to be that person anymore. And I think what's hard is when you first start, you know, on a Facebook, it's really just about your friends and family. But eventually, and especially if you're in entertainment, you end up with so many people on there that you've never met. And it's hard to know, who am I presenting here?
And what are my goals? What are my objectives? It is astonishing to reflect that Facebook started in February 2004 in a college dorm, has now grown to 2 billion active monthly users as of June 2017.
Mm-hmm. You know, my question is, who are these 5 billion weirdos that aren't on it? Where are they?
They're
probably Amish. Yeah.
They're going elsewhere.
Right.
They have
MySpace.
They have issues with opening their hearts, opening their lives, their scrapbooks, their virtual scrapbooks to people. I'm convinced that for every Facebook user, there's a different reason for using it. Everyone has their own reason. For example, introverts want to be drawn out in many cases. And Facebook and other social media is a very safe place to play.
Right.
You can be all together, but you can be alone.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah. Isn't that heavy? That's from Sherry Turkle, who wrote a book by the same name. And her view is that people really aren't communicating face to face. Their communication is in cyberspace.
Right.
And it's a huge, huge debate.
Yeah, we've had that debate here and there. Like Al said, the problem in a lot of ways, I enjoy social media less because of the fact that it's an extension of our jobs as entertainers so often, right? I've got to do it. I continue to do it. But coming up with the stupid hashtags and figuring it out, like with Instagram, and, well, no, if you do this boomerang video, it gets more likes and notice than it does if you just do a regular video. But the regular video does better than the photos do. And if you do a photo, then you need to not have the filter on. And I mean, and there's people that teach this stuff and everything. And after a while, you go, the fun of posting this stuff is lost on me now. Like, I do it, but I don't know that I enjoy doing it. And at the same time, I do think in what we do, it's still important because we're in that, we're in an era of, you know, where people, where entertainers need to be approachable and almost, what's the word I'm looking for?
Current, contemporary.
Current, contemporary, but also.
Authentic.
Yeah, but interacting one-on-one with people. People want to feel that, right? So, but like Al said, you know, she's, goes to make something funny and then goes, eh, I don't know that I want to be that person. I think a lot of people who do a lot of social media and they have to attach it to their the brand that is them feel the same way.
I'm thinking back to Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message. Mm. And I think there's so many different avenues and nooks and crannies now available to people who want to promote their personal brand,
yeah,
while either getting more clients or getting more friends, real-time right. friends, people in real life, that it's wildly complicated. I am not a social media expert. I understand the levers and the tools, but to really mass a social media campaign is a very, very, it's a skill set. It's
right.
a technical skill set with heart.
Yeah. Now, what is it? I mean, when we go back to like Sherry Turkhill saying, you know, it, this alone together, I really feel like it's there is something missing in terms of I prefer face to face communication. I don't like trying to have discussions over social media because I feel like I need to write an entire novel in that little box to make myself understood. Are people really, I mean, is anyone who isn't meeting face-to-face in real life really connecting on social media and making heartfelt connections? Or is it more of the I customer reach out or potential customer?
It's really what the participant wants it to be. People who don't want full-on face-to-face engagement feel really comfortable having a conversation on their terms. They don't really care if they ever meet the person or if they share their values.
Right.
That's a person like myself. I use the internet for musical enjoyment. I'm also on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Right.
That's it's more of a business piece, but for my own quality time.
Right.
I will use my Google account, go on YouTube, and critique the playlists that come up on YouTube. You can access, as you know, virtually any piece of published music in the 20th century, 21st century on YouTube. And the fun starts when you comment and then you get a reply. And this happened recently. I commented on a Steve Miller Band tune.
Ooh, which one?
Abracadabra.
Because it's the one garbage one? So many great songs. That song's garbage.
His biggest hit.
Well, Fly Like an Eagle. But, and don't you know, and I believe this was a legitimate person in real time responding. Steve Miller said, "Thanks, dude. That's one of my faves, too." Now, how many Steve Millers are there? And how many people are there who look like Steve Miller?
Yeah.
Could be an avatar if I was a skeptical person. Mm-hmm. But I thought, good grief, I've just sort of had a conversation with Steve Miller.
I'm sorry I crapped on your favorite song.
What don't you like about it? Too AM-y? Too
it's a bit
mainstream?
Too,
bop-ish?
I feel like it's... there's something to, it's almost novelty-esque in a way that it's always been, out of all of the Steve Miller Band songs, it's always been my least favorite.
It's been criticized as sexist. Abracadabra.
I'm going to reach out and grab you.
Grab you.
Yeah, we'll see about that. I'll smack that
like
hand
that
away,
anymore.
Steve Miller.
Or it just rhymes.
I think it just rhymes. But it's, do you know, this is what I love. You've been coming on the show for ages now, I cannot tell the passage of time. It could be 10 years for all I know, but for ages.
It doesn't feel like that.
And I would never in a million years have guessed that you go on YouTube and comment on stuff. Never would I have guessed.
An hour a day.
You spend an hour a day commenting on YouTube videos?
I do. And I don't have that many followers, but I pop up everywhere. People are replying to my commentary, and I comment on just about anything. I'm a former DJ, and my passion is 70s rock.
What is happening?
We're really learning a lot about Evan today,
I know. It's blowing my mind.
This is the Evan Thompson Hour.
I love it. Listen, so I had no idea. So is that a scheduled hour in your life where you're like, this is something I enjoy and I like having back and forth with people about this music, so I make time for it? Or is it something that you feel will help your business in some way? Or is it something what is it?
Nothing to do with business. It's just... I'm a former drummer in a rock band. We did
Come on.
We covered Zeppelin, Hendrix, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. There's a mouthful. Some of your listeners probably listen to them. But
I just want you to know.
Second-gen listeners, no doubt.
I am calling my brother immediately when the show finishes and be like, guess what I learned about Evan Thompson today?
Well, there's a whole lot of other stuff that may be for another time.
Yeah, very exciting.
Another channel. But in any case... I love the exchange with the fellow listeners. Some of them will trash my comments. Others will agree.
Because it's YouTube.
Yeah. And I hear from people around the world. I use my real name with my real face. I don't do an avatar.
Nice.
I don't do some little logo and spout garbage at people.
Right. You're being real. You're being authentic.
I enjoy it immensely. And there's no danger, there's no fear, there's no risk.
So, I mean, you said very definitely an hour a day.
Yeah.
So is this, is this something that you schedule as you time? And is it an hour because, listen, you could spend 3 hours, but that's life getting away from you, so you've decided on an hour? Like, how do you know it's 1 hour a day?
It's part of my regimen. It's what I enjoy doing after dinner. I just take my leave and go up and listen to the tunes. I could spend 3 hours on LinkedIn. I could spend all sorts of time on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I just find this is a good use of time, and it's a good focus for my internet time.
Right.
And when I mentioned no risk, two things I'd like to add to words. Radicalization and catfished.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We know about radicalization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We know what can happen when very lonely, perhaps misguided, brandless people, if you will, fall into the wrong conversation.
Yeah.
And it can end very badly, or it can be very enlightening. But radicalization has definitely a bad tone. Do you know what catfishing is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when you fall in love with someone who is not who you think they are, and they're probably trying to take something from you.
And catfishing has its origins with the fish, the wily catfish. It's a bottom feeder. And it communicates very well with others in its environment beneath the ocean.
Oh, and then it eats them?
Then it moves in and sucks them in, literally, and chews them out. And so, not a very nice topic, but catfishing is something you want to avoid. And you don't want to be drawn into that, although it's very easy to be drawn in. When you're looking for love, you're looking for compassion, you're looking for someone to share your story with, all the best reasons to reach out to people.
Right.
But sadly, it is a very dark, dark environment that you can wander into.
So you have to be very careful kind of what you're looking for on the internet, right? I mean, you're looking to talk to other music lovers and stuff like that. But if people are going on and there's really something that they feel deeply missing from their lives, it might not necessarily be the best place to find it.
And when the conversation shifts from the common interest, i.e. music or Steve Miller, someone starts proposing that you get together and you talk about an investment.
Yeah.
Or I know some people who would really love to meet you. Or any of those things, then it gets fishy, pardon the pun. And that's when it's time
to... I see what you did there, sir.
It was a pun.
Yeah.
You disengage.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we take a break? When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this and about how some people portray themselves on the internet. Is that their true self, or is it them just getting an outlet? You know what I mean? Blowing off steam. Are they showing their true personality, or are they just catfishing you? Are they just trolling you, right? And then some of our listeners want to talk about in the workplace and how you deal with other people's attitudes in the workplace. To what degree do you accept it?
Mm.
Right? Evan Thompson is with us. We are Ward and Al. Stick around. This is Canada Talks. Like a burning flame, burning flame, full of desire. Kiss me, baby, let the fire get higher. Abracadabra, I want to reach out and grab you.
Let's get back to Ward and Al on Canada Talks.
We are joined by Evan Thompson from Evan Thompson & Associates. He, of course, is the personal branding and communications expert. We've been talking about the internet and social media, making friends. Do you make friends? Are these true friends? You know, we talked about catfishing, but I think far more prevalent on the internet is trolling and people often being awful for the sake of being awful. I see it all the time. I watch it all the time. And it doesn't have to just be people talking about politics. It seems some people go on social media like Facebook or Twitter or whatever just to be awful, just to say mean things, just to get a reaction out of people.
They have the avatar and the fake name often and seem to just really want to be angry and spread that anger. But I guess... My modus operandi with those people is generally not to engage, although sometimes it's very hard to ignore and to be the bigger person and be polite. I mean, what is your advice, Evan?
I get comments like that about my choices in music, and I take the high road. And I don't get into a long dissertation. I don't apologize, never apologize, never say, oh, I'm sorry you don't like.
Yeah.
You just say, I chose this because.
Right.
And then that's it. But what trolls want more than anything else is a big confrontation.
Yeah.
They want the gloves to come off and they want you to take the bait and get up on your hind legs in this arena with who knows how many people watching, and go to it.
Yeah.
And you'll never win a conversation with a troll because just as they trash restaurants in their reviews, five-star restaurants are just trashed because they may never have visited the place.
Yeah. It's not about being right. You're trying to be right and they're just trying to ruin everything for you.
Exactly. And who knows who these people may be. They could be 9 years old. They could be 12 years old. They could be...
Oh, I'll find you and I'll find out what you are.
They could be...
Okay, I don't think that's a healthy reaction, right?
Form a little posse here.
You troll me?
It was not...
I'm coming to your town.
That is not true at all.
I might.
You've been trolled a lot. How many towns are you going to?
I used to go to towns all the time and I would confront the trolls. And they backed down.
They didn't back down.
You ain't messing with this.
Do you get heckled during any of your stand-ups?
Sure.
Only by Al.
That's not true.
Do you call the heckler to come up and have a little chit-chat?
Come up here, Cassandra. Let's see you say that in the booth.
No, that's right. You don't. You just shut them down.
Yeah.
And you don't abuse them. You don't slap them. No. You don't no. demean them.
You go to jail if you do that, Evan.
What?
Slap a heckler?
Some of the
bars God.
I've been in. That's pretty, anyway, maybe you just say,
well. Hang out with Evan more.
Honestly, I know. You have a secret life happening that's very exciting.
Do you ever slap them? No. He's like, well, I hit him with a tire iron. Yeah. What? 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 What kind of communications expert are you?
Yeah, and you
direct.
Don't. Oh yeah, that is direct.
Don't back away from me. I was only joking. It's okay.
No, I'm scared now. I'm frightened.
Al, you're pushing up into my chair.
You don't treat the heckler like they have a point. And you don't treat them like, oh yes, let's all listen to what you have to say. You go, no, you don't have the microphone.
What do you say? And this could apply to people who are trolled. Do you say, I suggest that you find another way to spend your evening? Or if you aren't comfortable here, you don't like it, then I invite you to leave.
Well, I don't think anyone's ever said it that nicely.
No.
I mean,
no.
That's just me. That's just me being corporate.
That was the very corporate way, but
during a break I'll tell you what I say to hecklers. I can't
Why
do it.
Wait
yeah,
for
I'm trying
a break.
To think if I can do it without swear words.
I don't know a single clean one.
Yeah, I don't know. There's often everything from, swear words come out of my mouth, but
the nicest one I've ever seen is the comedian pointed at the microphone and said there's a reason they don't hand these out at the door.
Yeah, that's a good way.
That's clever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you can bring...
I've said once, when we came in here tonight, they gave me a microphone, they gave you a chair. What's it?
Brilliant. So you're using your wit, using your strength to diminish them and neutralize them without completely humiliating them. You're smarter than they, and brains will win every day.
Yeah.
In any office conversation, any conversation in a bar, online.
I don't know. Sometimes you just point at your crotch and you say, speak into the boner phone.
I'll remember that one.
Good Lord.
What?
I do think, though, online, it's hard when you write things down, right? It's hard to have the same emphasis. And so I feel like you just have to not engage with that person.
Well, that's one of the the biggest cases that non-internet people have when they're talking about face-to-face meeting. You really can't read a person's body language online unless you get into a video, you know, situation. Can you imagine doing your stand-up in front of a monitor? And not having any audience response whatsoever?
Oh, no. No one. It wouldn't be funny.
No.
Everything
You got to pause for laughter. You interact with the pace of the audience.
I mean, don't know how to write a joke. I sell everything through facial expressions, tone, body movement. I barely have a punchline. I'm not kidding. It's true. I sell it really well.
And that's what gets you the trust and the confidence of your followers online and in real time. But I'm betting they're sold on you by seeing you live as opposed to online, even though you're in front of an audience.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
But imagine having sensitive conversations with people in a corporate setting at work with your boss without being able to see his or her body language. And that's what Sherry Turkle is talking about as parents rely more on tech to raise their kids.
Yeah,
that's
think
a good point.
There is so much, not even just body language, but again, tone. The tone of voice to me is so much of communication that even knowing where the pauses come in, right? It's that I always shudder when I see the kind of topics that are being discussed on Facebook. Because I think you can't have this conversation with a written word. Almost
impossible.
That's
why you got to put like winkies and smiley and emojis.
That's why emojis
and all that.
Were invented. People who crap on emojis, I always say you need emojis. So, because if I don't put a smiley face at the end of some of my texts, people are going to think I'm mad. But I'm like just kidding.
But we've had that. through text messages. You and I have miscommunicated because
he's like, not a good communicator.
Like one, well, like one of us was joking, and it comes off as it reads as serious in a text message, right? Oh. Or something was supposed to be smartass, and it reads as mean, right? Yeah. And it's just joking around. That it absolutely can be lost in translation. The tone can be lost in translation. Happens on the internet all the time. There is no sarcasm font.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, or just joking. I occasionally receive emails from clients that blow my hair back because they sound really negative, but they just haven't spent the time to fully think about their communication and flesh it out.
Yeah.
So I can think I'm fired and I don't know why, but then I realize that there's another piece that they didn't tell me.
Right. There's also, I think, when we write things, we hear it in our voice and in the tone we mean it in. And sometimes I will reread things, but I'll try to read it out loud very flat and go, okay, is this coming across that I mean this in a lighthearted way? Or in another, if they read it in another tone, is it going to come across as too harsh or, you know, whatever miscommunication there could possibly be? Because there's, it's just rife with possibility.
You know, one piece about communication, some feel that you have to be nice, always nice, and always take into account the other person's feelings.
Right.
If you need to address a difficult topic in person or in the written word, and you come across as nice, the air goes out of the balloon.
Right.
In other words, you need to be assertive.
Okay.
And there are assertive emails. And I don't mean screaming or shouting in, you know, uppercase.
Yeah.
I can't stand people that do that in this. Like, it's 2017 and there's still people typing in all caps.
Well, sometimes it's a function of where they are. If they're on their device and they can't get to the cap lock and fix it, they just let it go anyway. And that's not a good thing.
So, I mean, here's the thing. I do try to focus a lot on being nice just in the everyday world because it's an angry, terrible place out there. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I am someone who, if there's someone that needs directions and I'm walking down the street, but so are 10 other people, they're probably going to ask me. I don't know why. There's something about me where strangers are like, I will talk to you. And sometimes it's nice. And sometimes they are the meanest people that are having a bad day and they want someone to yell at and they see me and they do it. And so I go, I don't want to be that person, right? So I do try to be nice. I try to be more patient in a line. I try to let people in when I'm driving. But I do think that, yes, when it comes to work, there are certain times where, do you want to be polite? Yes, but you do need to be assertive and say, no, this wasn't what we talked about, or no, this wasn't what was needed in the situation.
When we're hired, and I'm speaking of myself as well, we're not hired to agree and take orders, literally. Mm-hmm. We're not hired to pump up egos and make nice with everybody. We're hired to get the job done and help the corporation, the organization, meet its business goals.
Right.
It is all about money, whether you admit it or not. It is all about the money in any enterprise.
I got to stop you, Evan, because Al and I, we have a contract that says we're actually supposed to make people feel nice. And it is our job duty here to agree with everyone. It's actually in our contract. It wasn't originally.
The way you said that,
They got good lawyers here.
But I do think that there are some people.
How you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's how you do it.
You guide people, including yourself, to the finish line that is the shared finish line.
Right.
You don't meet your goals by cracking heads and humiliating people.
Now, earlier we were talking about this, about, you know, people's attitudes changing in the workplace and how they react and how you react around them. You know, if someone is having a not even just a bad day or a bad week, but maybe, you know, their attitude changes from season to season or whatever. And even with this, we talk about sarcasm and you know, how people how they speak and how you react to it. Right. Now, Patty says, how do you deal with a coworker that makes bigoted or racist remarks? silence feels like an agreement.
Yeah.
And there is something to be said about that. Now, it's one thing. It is one thing if we're talking about someone who just flat out comes out and says something awful, right? Like, the Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world. You go, whoa, that guy's an anti-Semite, right? But what about that person that says something like, well, that they don't realize?
They're all lazy.
Yeah.
Something like that where it's not.
Or even just, they'll go, well, I mean, you got to admit, you know, for a small, this happened in the workplace, not here, but happened in the workplace to me. Someone turning, oh, you know, sometimes you got to stop and think that for a small percentage of the population, black people commit a lot of crime. And it's that person, I promise you, doesn't think he's racist. The guy that said that, right? And yet he said it anyway. How do you react to someone who said, like Patty says, if you go, yeah, you're agreeing with something that's racist, but at the same time, you don't want to argue.
It depends completely on the relationship you have with that person. If you are their supervisor, you can take a more authoritative tone and say, right, I would advise you that those sorts of comments are not acceptable in this workplace. And I would ask you to refrain from using that tone or speaking that way in future.
Yeah.
That's boss talk, and that's completely legitimate and right.
Yeah.
You don't need to get into, I care about you, I care about your career, I'd hate to see you come a cropper by saying bad stuff,
right,
and getting canned. If it's your cubicle mate.
Yeah, I was going to say, what if it's the person in the next cubicle?
Then you just say, if I could make a suggestion in future, I wouldn't go there, because you never know who you're going to be talking with. You never know who you're going to offend. And if they say, oh, well, I don't really care because that's the way I feel and that's what I read or that's what I heard, then you say, well, here's a story for you. I once said something that I regretted, and I've been very careful ever since.
Right.
So you don't point it directly at them for screwing up. You say, I've made that misstep, and I know what it can do, what it can cost in terms of your credibility.
And I think here's the difference in the workplace is that you don't want to feel like you're being complicit and agreeing with the person, but it's also probably not the time or the place to change a person's mind.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good point.
And I think there is that feeling of, but that's wrong, and we need to, when people say something racist, we need to say to them, that's wrong. But you're balancing work versus personal, right? And I think to say to them, listen, I don't agree with that, or you have to be careful of who's going to hear you and not agree with it, is a good approach to take, to say, like, what you're saying isn't okay, and I'm indicating that, but it's also not the place to kind of start a very dramatic conversation, because you could end up getting fired and because someone else is racist.
Mm-hmm.
What if it's a superior?
It must be telepathic.
Come on.
Boy, that is a difficult one. Again, sorry.
Well, I can tell you, there's a comedy club I used to go to every year when I was touring regularly. And my wife is Jewish. And this guy, the owner of this comedy club, who also manages it, right? I haven't been in years, but it was always so difficult because he was wildly racist and always wanted to, you know, sit and eat with me. You know, if I was eating my meal at the end of the night or between shows, he wanted to come over and sit down, and he would talk, and it was always like, and I'm not making this up, let me tell you something, he said, you know, I'm no racist.
Yeah, that right away means you're racist.
And then it was, let me tell you about that N-word in the White House. And he would then go on this long rant. And I got to sit there, and I'm eating, and I'm working for the guy as a contract employee, a comedian. I'm sitting there listening to him. And then he'd be like, yeah, you got a picture of your wife? And I'm like, yeah, here's a picture of me and my wife. He's like, oh, yeah, she's definitely a Jew. And you're like, what? You know, but the guy's paying me.
But he hasn't paid you yet. That's the thing.
No,
he
hasn't paid me yet.
He's paying you at the end of the week.
So at the end of the week, he's going to pay me. And if I were to turn and go, by the way, all that crap you said this week was BS, don't say it again, I'm never coming back there. I'm never going to get hired as a comedian there. So it was years of me having to nod and go, yep, okay, yeah, sure, you're right. Or just, you know, because I never could. Like Al said, you want to go blah, blah, blah. But in this case, I couldn't afford to lose the work.
But there must
that's
be...
That's disgusting.
Yes.
I mean, there must be a way to say, you know, I prefer not to talk about these things. I mean, I don't know what the way is.
I would typically change the subject, but he found a way of getting back on it. You know, comedy club owners, Al.
Yeah.
If you're pressed and you feel you have the trust and you feel credible in the eyes of the boss, you can simply say, I have to tell you, this is making me very uncomfortable.
Right.
What does he or she pay you to do? Be comfortable. Perform in a comedy club. You can't get up and do your work.
Yeah.
Work clean, work dirty, whatever you work, and be in knots because someone has insulted your wife.
Yeah. No, he would just double down. I'm like, this makes me uncomfortable. He'd be like, what are you, gay? Like he would be that. Yeah. He was that kind of a person. And and that's difficult, you know, if you work. It's one thing in an office, right, somewhere. But if you're a contract employee, a lot of times, I mean, Halifax Heather, one of our regular listeners, here, there's a prime example. You know, she's a contract employee as a hairdresser. Mm-hmm. Imagine some of the things I guarantee her regular customers say.
Yeah, it's a really...
That she has to deal with because she's like, oh, God, you know, it's just...
We do have to take a break. Yeah. Evan, can you stay with us?
Gladly.
Excellent. We are joined by Evan Thompson, a personal branding and communication expert. When we're really hitting him with the hard stuff today.
It's great.
More from him when we come back. You're listening to Ward Now, Channel 167, Canada Talks. Work so we can work to work it out. And I promise you, kid, that I'll get so much more than I get. I just haven't met you yet.
Welcome back to Ward and L on Canada Talks.
We are joined by Evan Thompson of Evan Thompson and Associates. He is a personal branding and communications expert. We've been talking about, you know, essentially about interpersonal communications today, whether it's online or in the office, the way people troll other people, our demeanor. Mm-hmm. Are we really making friends or are we just... spewing our opinions out into the ether? And then that went into the workplace. And what do you do with, say, I mentioned a comedy club owner I had to work for over and over again who was obviously racist. And how do you react to someone that you need to work from that talks like that? Well, here's something. During the break, Evan and I talked about this a little bit. So here is another example of that. I said with the comedy club, with comedians, they're contracted employees. They're not regular employees. So you're only contracted for the week. And a comedy club, you know, if you go to them and complain, I don't like the way you're talking to me, they'll just say, okay, cool. We won't have you back here again. And the comedian doesn't want to lose the work. Well, now let's talk about people who get a lot of crap and listen to a lot of things because they are afraid of what will happen if they speak up. And that is interns.
Oh, yeah.
In any industry.
We talk too much about, not too much, we talk a lot about interns that don't get paid and unpaid interns. But now let's talk about the fact that a lot of people think they can just talk to interns any way they want.
You know, that's it's a very important topic, extremely important for so many reasons. It sounds dreadful when a young person is taken advantage of, mm-hmm. because they're in debt, they need to pay tuition, they're working three jobs, et cetera, et cetera. In situations where I've seen this, the rationale on the part of the tormentor, the person who's dishing this out, is they've got it good. You should hear my story. You should hear what I went through.
Yeah.
Whether it was as an articling student in a law firm, a rookie financial advisor in a wealth management firm, any industry you can think of. The person who dishes it out does so on the authority of their previous experience, mm-hmm. which is not valid.
Yeah. I agree.
Completely invalid. Has nothing to do with the current situation and making the most of the engagement with the intern.
Yeah.
You're burning them out, running them down.
There is also one thing that I've heard from people before that just makes me insane is they act like it's the culture. Like, for instance, I've known people who are like, well, this is just what it's like in a newsroom.
Yeah.
Well, I do not care.
That's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is. Or that's the culture of, or when you're in this business, you know, to me, what I work really hard on in life is being the bigger person, is being better, is making the experience, hopefully, I would so much rather be a mentor than a tormentor.
Oh, I love that.
See what I did?
That's a tweet right there.
And that's a tweet I feel comfortable tweeting. for people who want to know, the tweet this morning was a fart joke. Anyway, I don't understand these people who are like, someone else made it hard on me, therefore I'm going to make it hard on you. I never understand that mentality. And I don't understand this idea of, especially with an intern, they're already not getting paid to be there, right? They're allegedly there for work experience. Half the time they're just treated like a personal assistant, right? Go fetch me this.
Yeah.
And so... why would you not? What is the point of having that person there if you're not going to, in some way, try to impart some wisdom or, help them move forward? It makes me nuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the some would say the glory days of rock and roll, I'd say the dark days of rock and roll. That's the way roadies were treated and groupies, humiliated constantly because they wanted a shot at fame. They wanted a shot to say, I toured with so-and-so.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I've got the t-shirt. That means everything to them.
Yeah.
Because it could lead to, financial gain in some way. With, younger interns, and interns need not be young people. They can be people
absolutely
who are starting a second career.
Our last intern, Jeremy, who is so great, but he was, I think, 40. And had gone back to school, and he was wonderful.
Yeah.
How did he...
All of our interns have been great, actually. We've been very lucky.
We've been very lucky, mm-hmm. But he was... usually they are kind of first time at school, younger, like 20-year-olds, mm-hmm. right? And Jeremy was the exception and was so great.
Well, the piece, with interns, it's a two-way street. It behooves the employer to have interns because... it gives them a face in the community. The interns can talk to their cohort.
Mm.
That's a little bit of a elevated view. Then the reality is that they add value. They're important human capital. They can bring value to the organization and the business.
Yeah.
And learn.
Yeah.
And hopefully stay.
Totally.
But it's a two-way situation. It's good public relations to have interns because you're giving young people and not so young people a chance to learn the industry. You're opening the doors, but you're also getting really enthusiastic, skilled, mm-hmm. committed work.
And I think we have a good, our boss and I have talked many times about the concept of interns, and he is adamant. He was like, if I ever see anyone ask an intern to get them a cup of coffee, they will be in so much trouble because mm-hmm. they're not, you can get your own coffee. They're not here to learn how to get you a coffee, And I think that's a really important, from the top down mentality to have. And so I also think, if there is someone in the middle that is not treating the interns well, the onus is on the people above them to say, that's not what we do here. And hopefully there's more places where people have that attitude than places that just abuse their interns. But I'm concerned it may not be that way.
Well, it really does start at the very top.
Yeah.
If the leader of the organization or group has had a good experience coming up in the industry and earned his or her stripes and been shown respect along the way, then chances are they will extend the same respect and share that and lead by example. If they're insecure and they feel beat down and it's their time to get even, then there's trouble.
Right.
Well, also, why would you have an intern if it's not something you don't need? Our interns come here and they learn to run the boards and they learn to do broadcasting and editing things because that's what we need, right? They learn to produce and to do, you know, technical directing and board operating because that's what we need. If we needed people to go get coffee, we could actually hire people to do that. We don't actually need that. So that is one of the things that's always baffled me about places that take on interns and then give them menial work to do, just because I go, did you need that? I mean, don't you actually need people to eventually learn to do these jobs that they're supposed to be interning to do in the first place? And if you don't need them now, then you don't need an intern. If you don't need, or if you don't think you're going to need them ever, then you don't need an intern. I don't know. It's just
good news travels fast, but bad news travels faster.
Speed of light.
Yes, thanks to social media.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Glassdoor and check it out. You know, before I take on clients, I go to Glassdoor.
Wait, I don't know what Glassdoor is. What's Glassdoor?
Glassdoor is essentially a tell-all.
Oh no, we only have 30 seconds.
Okay. It's a website to get some intel on a company that you're going to be doing business with or being interviewed with. It will tell you everything.
Oh.
Employee satisfaction rating, salary levels, general brand quality in the industry.
Evan Thompson and Associates, I can vouch for, is wonderful.
At
check them
C-suite
out.
C-suite prospects.
On Twitter. Evan, you are the best.